Before we pray again, we shall turn briefly to the portion read in the Epistle of Paul to the Romans, the chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, we may read from verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Note those words, how solemn they truly are. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. The apostle is writing here to the Romans, who were reckoned as Gentiles, and the purpose of his writing to, writing the epistle actually to all Jews and Gentiles alike, is to demonstrate and prove that the whole human race is under condemnation and guilty of sin. And while the sins that would be found among the Gentiles might be considered by many of the Jews to be far more heinous and far more provocative of God, Paul comes to one conclusion: all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. But there are certain sins that the apostle points out as particularly provocative of God, so much so that he actually manifests or reveals his wrath. Now, that does not mean that he reveals entirely all his wrath, but he does reveal something of what his wrath is like, and he reveals what happens when he is provoked to reveal or make known his wrath. And the apostle here in this first chapter is speaking of the power of the gospel. He says he is debtor both to the Jews and the Gentiles to preach the gospel, and he said he wasn't ashamed of it because it was the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So although he will here tell us of the sins that are so provoking to God, he has confidence in the power of the gospel. However low men have gone, God is so long-suffering, God is so patient, he is so forbearing, that in the gospel there is a revelation of divine mercy and divine grace, even for the very chiefest of sinners. But in a day like this, when we would reflect upon what is happening in this nation and the other nations of the world, it is very easy to overlook what is in the mind of God and why he is reacting to men's actions as he is doing. Men want to be rid of the coronavirus as fast as possible. That's the great concern. They're not concerned about getting rid of their sins. They're not concerned about repenting before God. They're not asking, why is this happening? The only thing that matters is, let's find a cure so that we can carry on as we've been doing. That's what we want, to get back to what we think is normality as fast as possible. And this is what you hear even the politicians and the medical professors stating: if we are able to return to what they consider normality, they call it the pre coronavirus lifestyle. That's all men want. Let's get back to enjoying life as we want it, as we will it to be, and so on. In this chapter here, Paul tells us how God reacts to the sinful actions of men. And what happens when the knowledge of God is rejected? You see, although the apostle is writing here to Gentiles, he tells us that they, like everyone else, this is what sometimes people will say, well, what about the heathen? What about the Gentiles? They've never heard the gospel. No one has ever brought the gospel to them. Is God just in punishing them? If he sends them to hell, is that fair? Is that just? You'll see what the apostle writes at the end of verse 20. So that they are without excuse. They are without excuse. Little wonder then the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, because no one can excuse themselves. And this generation is without excuse for its behavior and conduct. We may think to ourselves, well, and you heard me speaking on Sabbath, a poor young lad that I met, 23 years of age, not hostile, not in any way antagonistic, but utterly ignorant of God and having no idea why he should even need God in his life, because his parents before him had brought him up and they didn't need God, they didn't need religion, so why should he? And we might almost feel pity, and we ought to, that such a generation is so ignorant of God. And we might think, well, aren't they excusable? Parents are responsible, are they not? They never took them to church. They never read the Bible to them. We have to excuse them. Well, the apostle is writing about the heathen. And he says they are without excuse. And the reason they're without excuse is because God has revealed himself in his own creation. He has revealed his power, his knowledge, his might, his intelligence, his wisdom, and so on. And therefore, they are without excuse. Because of this, they are rejecting the light that God has given them. They are rejecting the evidence that God is, that God is real. They are leaving out the fact of God in their thinking, as here we read verse 28. Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. There was a time when they thought of God. They had knowledge of God. They understood. You go to the heathen, they look to the heavens, they look around them in creation, and whatever way they think, they will come to the conclusion, well, we didn't create this. We are part of that which has been created, and we are dependent creatures. We're not self-existent. Someone had to create us. Someone has to sustain us. Someone had to be before we were, and when they look around and someone had to be before the mountains and the valleys and the seas and the stars and the planet. Someone had to be before it, and they have to conclude, well, there has to be a God who created it and who sustains it. That's putting it very simply. But then what does the apostle say? Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. What an accurate description of this generation. You go to the council chambers. You go to the schools. You go to the parliaments. And what do they want? We don't want prayer anymore. We don't want any Bible reading anymore. We don't need any chaplains. We don't want to retain God in anything we think about. We don't want to retain God in the minds of the children, so put it out of everything to do with education. They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. They wanted to think. They wanted to reason, but keep God out of it. We want to be able to reason things ourselves because we are the most intelligent that exists in the universe. There's no higher intelligence than ours. There's no mind greater than ours. And therefore, we don't need God. We don't need God to tell us anything. We don't need God to direct us. And so we're not going to retain the knowledge of God. Any light we had, any knowledge we possessed of God, the way we used to think, we're not going to think that way anymore. The way we used to look at things, we don't want to look at it that way anymore. But you will see that they are without excuse before God, and they're even less excusable because of the fact they are actually witnesses to how God is reacting to their behavior. But you see, they don't want to retain God and their knowledge. So even when they're afflicted, when God is dealing judicially with them, they refuse to acknowledge him. Look what happens when we come to verse 32. Who knowing, this is the stage they eventually come to. Who knowing the judgment of God. Why? Because they've seen it. They've experienced it. They have experience of God's dealings with them. But, you see, they refuse to retain God and their knowledge. So they interpret God's dealings with them entirely different. And so they don't have God in it. So whatever these afflictions are, they're not from God because God doesn't exist. Whatever's happening to us in our society, it's very inconvenient, it's very troubling, it's very annoying, it's very distressing, but whatever, God isn't in it. Wherever it came from, it didn't come from God because he doesn't exist anyway. And notice where they come to, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Now, don't you know that man is in pursuit of pleasure? And look at the kind of sources of pleasure that are mentioned here. Who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, they do the things that will bring judgment from God upon them, but they don't fear God. They don't have any fear of God anymore. They're prepared to defy God because they're not afraid of God anymore. And isn't that the society we're living in? They're not afraid of God. The politicians, they're not afraid of God. They're not afraid of his judgments. They're not afraid to violate his laws. They're not afraid to mock him and his people. That is something that I believe, if we're honest, we can see. man in the past used to fear God. Sinners, even if they didn't repent, used to tremble at the threatenings of God. Not anymore, or very few at any rate. And children are growing up with no fear of God. And this generation has become so hardened that they can defy God without one tremble. But they have pleasure in them that defy God. It has become in society the greatest source of pleasure to war against heaven, to fight against God. It seems you go to the parliaments, to the politicians, and it is their great pleasure to introduce policies, to introduce laws, to legislate in defiance of God. That's the most pleasing thing that now we witness in society. Such is the wrath of God revealed from heaven against. Now, I don't want to spend much time. We may have to return to it later in the evening, but you'll notice, for example, in verse 21, we read, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not. You see the logic, and Paul's thinking there's reasons for the events that are taking place, because of what they've done. God reacts this way. Verse 24, wherefore God also gave them up. There's a reason for it. Verse 26, for this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, and so on. So God is reacting. Now, if men don't fear God, they don't care who God is or what he thinks or what he does, they're not interested. They're not even going to have him in their thoughts. Now, can you imagine where the church comes and where the people of God come into such a society? They're not going to be very popular. Those who continue to fear God, who fear his wrath, who are witnesses, who take seriously what God is doing in society, do you think they're going to expect to be very popular? Do you imagine that they're going to be listened to? We were dealing with it, in part at least, in Sabbath past, Paul telling Timothy, perilous times shall come. Paul is describing these most perilous of times when sin is no longer sin. That's what it comes to. Sin isn't sin anymore. God's commandments don't exist, so any violation of them doesn't exist. Sin doesn't exist. Men have pleasure in sinning. Men have pleasure in defying God. That's what society comes to. And we read verse 24, wherefore God gave them up to uncleanness, and you witness a progression in the downgrade and a progression in God's judgments. They keep getting worse. They become more severe. And yet, where do the judgments rest? Where do we see particularly the wrath of God manifest against and in the conduct of men? God gave them up to uncleanness. When God gives them up to uncleanness, there's no limits upon it. There's no limit to what degree of uncleanness and immorality men will be prepared to go. And so you think to yourself, well, And the older generation think, well, when we were young, people wouldn't even speak of such behavior. Because Paul tells us in the New Testament that there are sins that ought not even to be mentioned. They are so vile, they shouldn't even be spoken of. But we have reached the state in this generation where no one is embarrassed in the slightest about any sin. There's no embarrassment anymore. People don't hide their faces in shame. They're quite open. They talk, they boast of their sins. They boast of their immorality. And why is this? Because God gives them up to uncleanness, to just be as unclean as they want, to be as filthy as they want, to be as immoral as they want. And then in verse 28 we read, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. It's as though the mind is now engaged in conceiving ever more evils. The mind becomes the tool of the wicked, godless heart. And so the mind is engaged in opposition to God. The mind becomes now engaged in one thing, sinning more and more, going into greater and greater depths of wickedness and depravity and sin. Now, when we read these words, we can ask the question, does this describe this generation? And if it does, then we have to ask, is God acting presently? You see, when we come to pray, we have to know to whom we're praying, and we have to approach God with honesty, and we have to then ask, what is the mind of the God that we are praying to today? We come to pray for the things that are sin it is directed us to pray for. Are we coming to God who is pleased with this society? Are we coming today to a God who is provoked? Are we coming to a God today who has given over this generation to its own lusts, to its own sins, to become more and more and more evil? Do we recognize, do we believe God is just in doing that? And that therefore the only way we can come, as it already was prayed, is to God to plead in thy wrath, remember mercy. But we shall leave it there for the moment.